hands it off. Left circle, McNabb. Dorofeev, one-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin. Score! Noah Hanifin. Power play goal.
From the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the BGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Friday. And the BGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. Ryan Wallace hanging out inside T-Mobile Arena. Chris Chapman back inside the Fox Sports Studios. And for the Golden Knights, it is a must-win situation. It is Game 6 around the corner, just about 2 hours or so to puck drop. Pre-game show will start at 6 o'clock. And it'll be interesting to see how things unfold for the Golden Knights. Now, listen, when you look at the Golden Knights overall in elimination games, or when they have faced elimination, that's a better way to put it, they're 2-4 overall. 2-1 in Game 7s, 0-3 in games where they face elimination prior to Game 7. Now, when you look at it on its face, that's not exactly a scenario that you want to be in, but the statistics, as Dan Duva says, are prophecy, not history, or history, not prophecy. And so the fact of the matter is, for the Golden Knights, what they've done in the past doesn't have any real bearing on what you can expect from this team right now. And I'm going to paint a picture for you that I really can't shake in my mind. And it's very simply this. When you are looking at a team that hasn't done something before, that is, extend a series when facing elimination in games 5 or 6 to a game 6 or game 7, when you haven't done that before, and you have an opportunity to do that for the first time, and then you do it, you can build so much confidence in that simple fact. You can build so much confidence in your game overall if you can overcome that. And so for a team that is a defending Stanley Cup champion, for a team that is trying to force a Game 7, for a team that has to feel confident and comfortable in their game, if they're able to do that and force this series to go the distance and a Game 7 on Sunday, if you can do that, you can have your moment. If you can do that, you can build on what you've just accomplished. And if you can do that, I really do believe that the Golden Knights can push the pace and find a way to win this series. I'm not counting out the champions. I'm just not. Bruce Cassidy was asked this after the game on Wednesday night. What are you going to hang your hat on? They're the team in the league that can hang their hat on what they accomplished last year and knowing that it's in that room to win a game. Knowing it's in that room to win in a scenario where it gets hard. And I think that informs a lot of the decision-making for Bruce Cassidy going into this game. I think that's why Aiden Hill is getting the start tonight for the Vegas Golden Knights. And I think that's why, if you're a fan of this team and you recognize how this series has gone, how close the margins have been, how close a series it really has been through five games, you have to trust that the Golden Knights in that room, they're going to figure it out. They're going to find a way to play their best game of the year. It's the biggest game of the year for the Golden Knights. It is the biggest game that this team has played in or is going to play in since June 13th last year, since winning the Stanley Cup. And we all marveled last year at how well the Golden Knights played in closeout games. We all marveled at how well they were able to go through the playoffs and eliminate teams when they needed to. I see no reason why they can't do that tonight and extend this series out. We're going to shift gears now. We're going to bring in Catherine Tappan from the NHL Network. You can watch NHL Network's Catherine Tappan on NHL Now and NHL Tonight through the Stanley Cup playoffs. Catherine, I believe this is your first appearance here on the VGK Insider Show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, I believe it is too. No, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. And I'm on such a big night out there in Vegas and, a crucial game tonight for your Golden Knights. So thank you so much for asking me to come on.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at this series through the first five games, has there been anything that's maybe stood out to you or gone, a little bit less according to the plan that maybe you had in your mind of what this series would be?
Well, I think initially, you know, I was quite surprised to see Vegas go up 2-0 against this, you know, incredible Dallas team that we just marveled at all season long. And here they are jumping out to a 2-0 series lead. And then it's like, okay, well, gosh, does Dallas, you know, did we miss something with Dallas? Is there a flaw there? Is there something we can analyze as far as what's, you know, wrong, or maybe they're whatever it was? And then all of a sudden it was boom, 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 3 in a row for Dallas. And now you're thinking, well, what the heck is wrong with Vegas? So it's been a very interesting series in the fact that, you know, the games, it's very lopsided, like 2 and 3. But at the same time, these are two of the best teams in the Western Conference. These are two teams that many people pick to go to the Stanley Cup final individually. So I think that, you know, I was surprised at the start. I thought for sure it would be even 1-1 after two. Then it, you know, for Dallas to rattle off 3 in a row without Vegas answering that call, I was quite surprised. I think 2 is one thing, 3 is a whole other situation. Mm. And now you find yourself in an elimination game 6 if you're the Golden Knights. So it's definitely been one of the more puzzling series. I'd say out west, you know, Vancouver and Nashville, I've kept a close eye on that, and I've covered the games for TNT for that series. And I think that one was a little bit more what we expected from a physical standpoint, and it was sort of a, you know, it's very back and forth, and it's what you would expect with two great teams out west. But, I mean, Dallas and Vegas has been a very, I guess I would say, perplexing series. And then you factor in the lineup changes that Bruce Cassidy's done and the goaltender changes, and it's creating a whole other wave of conversation. So very, very interesting series to watch, no question about it.
You know, for the defending Stanley Cup champion Vegas Golden Knights, this is the first time that they've trailed in a series since Game 1 last year against the Winnipeg Jets, and it's the first time that they're facing elimination since 2021. What are you kind of expecting from a team that has been to the top of the mountain, that won it all last year, in a very uncomfortable and very different scenario for them?
Well, I think it's funny you say it's the first time since 2021. That's only, what, 3 years ago? I mean, this is a very new team in the league, and so I laugh because I'm like, this is a team that, you know, they don't have those long-term stats under their belt because it is a new franchise. And it, you know, you can't go back 20 years and say, my gosh, this has been something that's been plaguing them for 10 years. I mean, you look at Boston and Toronto right now, that 3-1 curse for the Boston Bruins. I mean, that is a legit historical issue that we are now talking about going into game 7 tomorrow. But for the Golden Knights, I mean, there's zero issue. There's zero concern, there's zero worry with this team and what they're able to accomplish. I mean, facing elimination, a lot of players love these games. They get up for these games. They become superstars in these games. You know, they make their names for themselves. It's a different mentality when you're coming to the rink. And I've heard players all across the league talk about this week, whether it's the Vancouver-Nashville series and the Predators walking to the arena facing elimination. Tomorrow it's going to be Boston and Toronto are facing elimination in that game 7. So you hear the same comments, and I just think it becomes, you know, it's win or die. It's ride or die. It's you have to get the job done tonight. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And if there's one team that can get that done, it's a team that won the Stanley Cup not even a year ago. It's a team coached by Bruce Cassidy. You look at that lineup, I mean, you have superstars up and down that lineup, championship caliber players on, you know, multiple Stanley Cup winning. You've got Alex Pietrangelo's won cups. You know, Alex Martinez, you've got your Vegas Knights that have won cups. And so the experience is there, and they know what it takes to win. And that's all there is to it, whether it's game 7, game 6, game 5, elimination, not elimination. They know what it means to walk into the arena and need to get a victory. And I think that that's all this is tonight to them. And it's business. And it's, you know, what can we do to get to Dallas? How can we expose whatever we've seen from them? You know, there's got to be something. If Dallas has won 3 in a row, there's got to be something we see that we can take advantage of. And that's what you're, you know, that's exactly what that coaching staff is working on today, and those players are working on as well. So I don't think you should worry that they don't have experiences in quote unquote elimination games. I think, you know, the concern is, why have we lost 3 in a row, and how do we remedy that tonight to force this to go to a game 7?
Yeah, Catherine, maybe I'm completely off on this, and you come from the television side, national TV. We're here, obviously, locally, and we see things a bit different than maybe the national media does. But it seems to me like Vegas is good for business, for you guys. Like, there's such a dislike for this team and the way that they've gone about doing things, that there's so many people rooting against them, that it seems like it would bring in a lot more viewers. Am I completely off base in that?
I think it's so funny. I mean, Listen, I can't tell you how many friends I meet that are not, you know, they are casual hockey fans. They are not diehard one team. They didn't grow up rooting for the Rangers or the Bruins or this or that. They love the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, you guys, from a national perspective, and it's very easy, I would think, when you're in that, and you guys are the insiders and you're around it every single day, to get that sense of, you know, oh, everyone, it's the world against us. Well, that's how the team was created, right? It was this cast of misfits. It's this cast of, you know, we're going to send these players off to the expansion draft, and they're going to be a part of this new team. So that's always going to be the chip on the shoulder of the Vegas Golden Knights. Very different than what we're going to see with, let's say, Utah next season. But I can't tell you how many, I mean, I live in the New York, New Jersey area. There are so many Golden Knights fans because, you know, they're just passionate about how this team was created. They loved watching the Stanley Cup last year. They loved watching, you know, the year they were first in the league when they lost to the Capitals. But holy cow, this is a brand new franchise that just, like, struck gold, and now they're in the Stanley Cup final. I mean, how does that even happen? So the Vegas Golden Knights have been a storyline since they entered the league. And sure, you're going to have your haters of every team. I mean, you're going to have your passionate fan bases, and Vegas has created some really nice rivalries over their short term in the National Hockey League so far. They've built that rivalry, which is what you want. You know, you want those rivalries that you do have that passion and you do have that national audience. But I think in general, I mean, you watch the TNT broadcast, you've got Charles Barkley and Shaq talking about the Golden Knights. You've got people wanting to go. It's a destination to go to a game there. Many people go there on vacation. Many people go there for their adult Disneyland weekend and whatever it may be. And the Golden Knights are a ticket on their itinerary. It's no longer just, you know, Cirque du Soleil and whatever else they might be going to. It's to hit up a Vegas Golden Knights game. And, you know, we chatted about this tonight on NHL Now. Which venue would you rather have tonight in an elimination game? Is it Bridgestone Arena where the Preds could be eliminated, or is it Vegas where Vegas could be eliminated? And both Mike Ruff and Brian Boyle, who have played in those arenas, you know, not Ruffer, but have said absolutely Vegas. You know, it's just different. It's special. I think, you know, a lot of people have latched onto that team because of, one, what they accomplished, obviously. Everybody, you know, wants to root for them. But also how they were assembled and how quickly they've gotten on track and made things happen out there for that market, the city, everything. So, I got to tell you, I do have so many Golden Knights fans that want to know how the team's doing. I actually emceed an event last night in New York City. I'm a big supporter of the United States Marine Corps. I come from a family of Marines, and I did their Leatherneck Ball last night, which provides money to their scholarship fund for Marine children. And every single person was asking me about the hockey playoffs. I mean, a room full of 350 participants, they're all asking me. And I had Washington Capitals, New York Rangers, and Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, so there are so many eyeballs in the East Coast that are watching what you guys are doing, what the Golden Knights are doing. And I think it's great. It's great for the league. It's just, it's a wonderful story. And there are a lot of people behind that team right now, not just living in Vegas.
Catherine Tappan from NHL Network joining us here as we dig a little bit into game number 6 between the Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars. Open it up a little bit to the rest of the National Hockey League in just a bit. But you mentioned rivalry when it comes to the Golden Knights. And, you know, they've had their moments with the San Jose Sharks the first couple of years. They've certainly had their moments with the Dallas Stars over the last couple of years as well. And it seems like the one constant in terms of writing Golden Knights history has been Pete DeBoer, whether it had been with those San Jose teams when he was coach of the Vegas Golden Knights and now certainly here in this one with the Dallas Stars. Is it safe to say that the fabric of the Vegas Golden Knights is intertwined with Pete DeBoer and perhaps he is the biggest rival to this team?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, gosh, I hadn't even thought of that. But, yeah, for sure. It's really interesting, and he has been very much intertwined in the relatively new history of the Vegas Golden Knights. He's been a part of every single season in some capacity, right? So I think absolutely you've got to consider him that. And, listen, if his Stars knock out Vegas in this series, you're going to have a whole other conversation of why he's a rival. But, you know, Pete DeBoer is an outstanding coach. And I know a lot of players that have spoken about him as a player on his team. I know players who have been playing against him and had to deal with, you know, his coaching style and the way he coaches against them. And I know Pete personally. I mean, I've covered the league for many years, and he has always been very generous, very supportive of me. And I've learned a lot from him, whether it's in press conferences or it's when we get him off to the side one-on-one with the broadcast team prior to a game. You know, this is a man that knows exactly what he's doing. He knows the pulse of his team. And, you know, he's got this Stars team in a – first of all, they were outstanding during the regular season. We all know that.
Yeah.
And I think he is somebody that Vegas should be scared of because he knows exactly who he's got in that lineup. He will adjust the lines accordingly. He's got an outstanding goaltender in Jake Oettinger, and he knows how to coach his team. And so, you know, and he also knows how to prepare for that environment in Vegas better than anybody because he's been on both sides of that bench. So I think, yeah, I think it's just definitely safe to say that he is a part of the landscape of the Vegas Golden Knights and the rivalries that are going to come. And, you know, he's, I think it's an incredibly unique perspective that he has because he's been in that building, you know, as a, you know, the fan favorite, and he's been in that building too as public enemy number one. So it's an interesting point you bring up, but I would absolutely agree with that. And I think also rivalries are created in the postseason, you know, it's, and that's what's going to happen here with Vegas and Dallas.
You know, these two teams are built very differently. Vegas has built their team largely through trades, whereas Dallas has built their core through the draft. Why do we not talk about Jim Nill enough as being the fantastic general manager that he is? Because, I mean, this team is drafted extremely well. They get Robertson, Oettinger, and Haskin in all in the same draft in the first three picks of that particular draft for them. It was a home run, but he followed up with Wyatt Johnston and Logan Stankoven and Thomas Harley. So why do we not talk about him as being one of the best general managers in the league?
Well, I think by nature, Jim Nill doesn't want you to talk about him, right? He's a he's an incredibly humble, hardworking man. He really, truly values his family. He values the people that work for him. You know, I know when he was with Detroit, he took a lot of people from Detroit to Dallas. He didn't want them to lose their jobs. He is, and I mean, one of the top five architects of, you know, of a team of in the National Hockey League. And I mean, in general, I think the general managers that we talk about are the ones that put themselves front and center with the team. You know, you hear from Brian Burke when he is a general manager of a team, even a president, you're going to hear from Berkey. You know, we know Lou Lamoriello is what he is. He's the godfather of hockey. He has been around the game for forever. He is legendary. He's done so much with championship teams, and you know, he's a Hall of Famer. You look at that, and then you look at some other general managers who may come out with some, you know, maybe some questionable comments about their players, and those general managers get talked about a lot. But Jim Nill is one of these. He does his business behind closed doors. He has the difficult conversations with his players behind closed doors. He trusts them. He values them. And he is I would liken him to David Poile when David was, you know, building the Nashville Predators and, you know, built many teams. But when he came to Nashville and had a responsibility to make that team what it was and built it up in that market and brought in Barry Trotz and, you know, made it a Stanley Cup, they went for the Stanley Cup one year and they've been in the playoffs for so many years and they're an amazing hockey club because of what David Poile did. That's exactly what Jim Nill did. And they are just general managers that prefer to stay on the outside. They don't want the attention. They don't want the media. They don't want the microphone in their face. But to your point, he deserves all the credit. He's incredibly well-respected. People who work for him work very hard, and that's why they find these deals. They find the guys to sign. They draft really well. They have amazing scouts that work hard because they want to for a man like Jim Nill. So I think, you know, you're seeing his fingerprints all over this franchise, but he's the last one that will tell you about it. So I think it's, you know, I appreciate that you bring him up because I would agree with you, like, he just doesn't get enough credit.
NHL Network's Catherine Tappan joining us here as we get into game number six between the Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars. But I do want to talk about one game seven. We know there's at least one. It's going to be the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins tomorrow night. The Leafs coming from 3-1 down to force a game seven. The Bruins really in a precarious spot where they could become the first team in the National Hockey League in any of the professional sports to blow consecutive 3-1 series leads. I guess the question that I have, and it seems somewhat far-fetched considering we're talking about the Leafs here, but who has more pressure in this game? It's got to be Boston, right?
Yeah, you know, I heard that question posed this morning on NHL Network Radio, and Rupper and Gordo were talking about it, and I personally think that there is still more pressure on Toronto. I see the perspective. I understand the Bruins 3-1 lead blown, blah, 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 but at the end of the day, you know, they lost Bergeron, they lost Krejci. They are a different team right now. I do believe that Jim Montgomery's job is on the line if this team does not win tomorrow. And I also believe that Sheldon Keefe's job is on the line for the Leafs if they don't get the job done tomorrow. So the pressure is on the coaches tomorrow, and it is very hot. But I would say with the teams, Boston, in my opinion, in the series is the better team. So there should not be pressure on them. They are coming back to their own building. They know what it takes to beat this team. We will likely not see Austin Matthews. You have Jeremy Swayman, who's been unbelievable. He is by far the best player on that team right now for Boston. And if they can just get a couple more chances and scoring opportunities for David Pastrnak, who was called out last night by his coach, so you know he's going to be fired up, I think that alleviates the pressure for the Boston Bruins. I still think the pressure is on Toronto. This is a team that has yet to prove to us with all these superstars and, you know, this star-studded lineup of Austin Matthews, who's probably not going to play, but you've got John Tavares, you've got William Nylander, who scored 2 goals last night, you've got Mitch Marner, you've got, you know, the defense is finally showing up, you got a good goaltender who's, you know, looking pretty, I mean, Joseph Woll is not he's not somebody you would have thought of during the regular season who would carry this team in the postseason, but he has played very well to deserve that respect. But I still just think the pressure's on Toronto because that city is living and dying by this team. And for the past two seasons, they have not performed. They've not gotten past the second round last year, let's call it. But prior to that, few first rounds they got out of. And it's a city that's craving that. They want it. They've been, you know, they've been so close to being on the brink. They want to at least get to the conference finals and have a chance to go for the Stanley Cup. And they've never gotten there in recent years with this crazy roster and all this money tied up in these superstar players. So I still think the pressure's on Toronto. But I think more so, if you look higher up, that pressure's on both those coaches, and they know it. And I think you heard it in both press conferences after that game the other night. And I think if Boston just sticks to their game plan, does their job, and feeds off the energy of that crowd and gets Pasta going a little bit more than he's been going, I think Boston won't have an issue.
You know, earlier in the conversation, we mentioned how popular the Golden Knights are, and you talked about it being a little bit of a different story than Utah. When you found out the team was moving to Salt Lake City, A, how surprised were you? Because I think we all thought that there was a possibility they were going to move. But I think we had heard maybe Kansas City, Houston, possibly Quebec City. So when you found out it was Salt Lake, how surprised were you? And were you surprised at how fast everything kind of happened?
Yeah, I think everyone was fast at how it happened. And certainly, you know, Utah is an unbelievable destination for the National Hockey League. Ryan Smith and his wife have done an outstanding job with the Utah Jazz. They are completely all in on the teams they own. And that's the mentality they have for this NHL team. So how great is that for the National Hockey League that you're getting an owner who is going to treat your players well, he's going to treat the league with respect, he's going to try and get tons of season ticket holders, and they're going to grow the game in Utah. I've been to Utah. I love everything about that state. I love the outdoor adventures, the skiing. It's a winter season destination. I mean, they have beautiful mountains and everything, but people go there, and you're talking about people from all around the country that ski and snowboard and go there for Christmas vacation, and that's during hockey season. So they're going to buy tickets to these games, and they're going to want to go see, you know, whatever the Utah team name is going to be against, maybe it's their team that's visiting town. So I love the decision to go with Utah. I was surprised at how quickly it happened. However, I'm not surprised it happened. I mean, being around the league for a long time, I am shocked that they have kept it and they've been able to keep it in Arizona for so long. And I give a lot of credit to Gary Bettman and his staff for trying to make it work in Arizona. And those fans deserve a team. I believe they're going to get back a team. I don't know if it's going to be with the current owner that's hoping to build an arena there, but I know they deserve it. We've seen what that market, you know, what they feel about hockey, how they've, I mean, you look at Austin Matthews and all the players that have come out of there. I do hope they get a team back. However, it was time to go. And the amount of money that the league was losing, that the players were losing, everybody was losing money on that. And the league tried their best to keep it going. And there's only so long, you know, you can lead the horse to water. You can't force it to drink. And that's exactly it. Time ran up. You can't have a National Hockey League game in front of 2,000 fans at Mullet Arena. That's not sustainable. There was no arena built right now that can sustain the team. So let's move for now. and we'll bring the team back eventually, and we're going to grow this market in Utah, and we're going to make more money for all the players and the coaches, and the fans are all going to be happy in the end. And you know, I'm glad they found a partner they could do that with. And again, I just think it's the time was up. You know, you have to make a business decision, and they did their best. They tried three different ways to get that team to stay in Arizona over the past decade. It just wasn't going to work. So let's reset. They found a great partner to reset with, and I think it's just wonderful for the league. I know it's very sad and disappointing for those Arizona fans and the players that played there and the Shane Doans that, you know, their jersey is in the rafters and they are the face of that franchise, but I think it'll be back. I think everyone understands this is a very big business decision and it's going to be good for everybody. And I think the fans ultimately would get their team back, which would be the best case scenario for everybody involved.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that on the Salt Lake City yet to be named, Utah yet to be named team, and what it's going to really mean for the National Hockey League. And you talk about hockey-related revenue. Like, you want a team that's got that arena set to go. Catherine, we know that you're incredibly busy. We appreciate all the time that you took with us today.
Oh, and, yeah. No, it's great to be with you guys.
And as far as debuts go, this one's phenomenal.
Well done
on all accounts.
I actually got home from work, so you got me at a good time. I'm just keeping an eye on that Vancouver-Nashville game, and I'll be watching your game in a few moments here. So it's a great night. I love playoff hockey. It's, you know, my schedule's set every single night watching these games, so it's awesome.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than playoff hockey.
It really
thanks
doesn't.
Again. Thanks again for jumping on here, and hopefully we can get you on maybe a little bit down the road as the playoffs progress.
You got it, guys. Anytime, and hey, good luck tonight. Have fun at that game.
Awesome stuff. That is Catherine Tappan. You can watch NHL Network's Catherine Tappan on NHL Now and NHL Tonight through the Stanley Cup playoffs. One-timers are next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers.
One-timers.
A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. We'll get to Bruce Cassidy, his audio from earlier today after morning skate in just a little bit. But first, let's get into it. Pierre-Luc Dubois, it's locker cleanout day for the Los Angeles Kings. Pierre-Luc Dubois was asked about how tough of a season it was for him and a potential buyout. It seems ridiculous, I know. Considering that he just finished up 1 year of an eight-year, $8.5 million AAV contract. But, believe it or not, that was asked of Pierre-Luc Dubois. His quotes are, "I have to be better. At the end of the day, it's on me. And in relation to the buyout, it's out of my control." So, Chris Chapman, I'm going to ask you this question.
Okay.
Somewhat seriously, but also somewhat tongue-in-cheek. There's no world where the Los Angeles Kings buy out Pierre-Luc Dubois, right?
No. I mean, he's got, what, 6-7 years remaining on deal?
So he's got 7 years.
And
depending on when the season ends and when the buyout period begins, they might be able to buy him out for 1/3 of the actual contract value as opposed to 2/3 of the actual contract value. It depends on when Pierre-Luc Dubois' birthday is in relation to when the buyout window starts, but it would be on the books for 14 years for Los Angeles.
Yeah, they're not buying him out.
Okay.
I mean, it's $8.5 million a year he makes. There's just when you say they're on the books for 14 years,
yeah.
I mean, this is year one.
Yeah.
There's zero chance they buy him. Now, could they trade him?
Yeah.
Sure. Who wants him?
Come on.
I mean, there's probably one team
you're going to say Montreal, right?
He wants them.
Sure, yeah.
It's a mess. And you know, I remember coming on the air with you the day that trade was made.
Yeah.
And both of us did not like it from the Kings' perspective.
Didn't love it.
You know, I mean, obviously it didn't really work out from Winnipeg's perspective either if you look at the way their season ended, but
they're in a better spot.
Yeah.
Now.
So for LA, you lose 3 years in a row to the Edmonton Oilers. You lose in 7 games 3 years ago or 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You lose in 6 games last year, and you lose in 5 games this year.
Yeah.
You're not moving forward. You're stagnant. In fact, you're going backwards.
No, you're regressing.
And you've got a 37-year-old Trevor Lewis coming off the books. You've got Arvidsson also coming off the books. You've got, you know, a couple defensemen coming off the books. So, I mean, all their goalies are free agents. They're not in a good spot. Like, it was almost like a make-or-break year for them.
Sure.
And they broke big.
So, goaltending can be an asset if they get the right guy. Like, if they go out there and get Linus Ullmark, then by all means, I think L.A. can kind of push in the right direction. But you're not going anywhere unless you get Pierre-Luc Dubois going. And that's been the conundrum for Pierre-Luc Dubois now with his third team. It didn't work in Columbus. It didn't work in Winnipeg. It hasn't worked through one season in Los Angeles. We'll see how things kind of shake out there. Okay. The Toronto Maple Leafs force game seven tomorrow night against the Bruins. It was a defensive gem from the Leafs last night against Boston. The Bruins looked timid. They looked scared in the first period. They had one shot on goal, legitimately one shot on goal, and that might have been one shot in the first 25, even 30 minutes of the game. The Leafs were that good. The Bruins were that bad. If the Bruins lose tomorrow, they'll become the first team ever to drop two series in a row blowing a 3-1 series lead. It's remarkable. It really is. And so I think, given how Jim Montgomery's kind of reacted throughout the entirety of the series, I think that's weighing on the Bruins.
I mean, it has to, right? I mean,
yeah.
There's no way. The my mind says there's no way they could do this 2 years in a row.
Yeah, they can.
But yet, they absolutely can.
If they did it last year with Bergeron and Krejci, there's absolutely a scenario where they can blow a 3-1 series lead to the Leafs.
Who takes the brunt of the blame if they blow it?
Pasternak, Montgomery, for sure. Those two guys. It's not on goaltending.
No. I mean,
it's on the ability. They can't score.
No, that's a problem that they should not be having with the players that they have, especially that top line of theirs. I want to see them lose. I want to see them blow it again.
Oh, wow, you're mean.
Well, I just.
You're a mean guy.
I don't have any sympathy. Listen, when you grow up as a New York Jets fan and Tom Brady
now it's coming back to
plays
football.
In the same division as you.
Literally nothing to do with
No, it has everything. Listen, Boston has had plenty to cheer for. They have a Stanley Cup championship in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
They've won multiple Super Bowls. They've got an NBA title, a cup not too long ago. They've won they've won World Series. I have no sympathy for them. Mm-hmm. I want to see them lose because it's Boston.
Okay.
If the Bruins played in, I don't know, Providence or Portland, Maine,
sure,
I probably wouldn't care.
Okay.
But because it's Boston, I'm going to root against them. And of all the teams to blow that 3-1 lead to, it would be epic to be the Toronto Maple Leafs.
The funniest thing in the world.
Oh, it'd be great.
Who wins tomorrow?
Boston.
Toronto.
Oh, man. Is Austin Matthews going to play?
I don't know. No idea.
What do you think he should play?
Can he play? That's the question.
I mean, they're
like if he can't play, you're not going to be able to help him.
You're not going to play him if he's unable to. If he's like 70%, you're not going to play him.
I mean, I would love to see it. I think the theater of it all would be amazing. Austin Matthews comes back in the lineup, leads his team to victory.
Scores three goals.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, my gosh.
Why not?
Oh,
all right, let's get to Bruce Cassidy from earlier today as he addressed the media.
With Barbashev moving up, are you trying to see if he can? Because it's easy that he can play with whoever you put him with. But as far as with Stevenson and Stone kind of getting them going, do you want him to kind of stay that fourth line mentality, or do you want him to kind of just play to his game? Basically,
just play to your game. Complement that line. You know, we've been searching a little bit. When Hurdle came in, center left wing, so there's been a lot of moving around. So there's really no, it's not a firm, well, it's Barbie this or Barbie, you know, it's just we're trying to find the best fit for everybody. And in game, we'll move it if it doesn't work. Howden's been up there. he's with Carly now for, you know, different reasons, and I'm not going to get into all of that right now, but at the end of the day, play your game. They're an attack-minded line, just like Jack and Marsh are, but they're also an ozone line that can cycle and so get to the net and complement what needs to be complemented. Get the puck off the wall to your center. There's no, responsibilities don't change necessarily from line to line. It's adapting to how the style of play of that line is, and there's a little communication there for sure. Usually on first touches in the ozone. Okay, I'm going to go behind the net every time, so anticipate that. So they'll talk, or I'm going to walk up the wall. Jack likes to walk, you know. He likes to hang on to it, whereas another line might be, I'm going to touch, take, absorb pressure, contact, and touch. So there's different things that they have to talk about in certain instances. Absolutely. Tendencies, how they want to play. But at the end of the day, you just got, you know, go be effective at what you do, and I think it'll work out fine.
With them only using five defensemen and you guys definitely being the heavier team, do you need more cycling? Do you need more ozone time?
We need more effective ozone time. Like they swarm quick to the puck, and I think shortening your bench, every coach has a different philosophy on that. I think, you know, over time, you probably have to manage that better the longer you go. So we're in the first series. I don't think it's a, you know, we wanted to establish forecheck presence and pressure on them no matter who was in the lineup, whether they're using four guys or six or five, because we feel it can be effective for us. And it limits their ability to get back up the ice. Like Harley and Heiskanen, these guys are good at the Lundqvist when he's in. They're good at getting up the ice supporting the rush. It's part of their offensive game plan. So it's a little bit of that too. And then creating turnovers and wear them down, yes. More ozone time. We need more ozone time by winning more races in battle and getting out of those swarms quicker with appropriate support and recovering shots, right? We need to be better on recovering shots that do go towards the net. We need to be better executing the next pass. Like, we're watching it. We're like this close to executing some of those plays that are going to make the difference in goals. And we've seen it. There was at least six the other night that if we're on like we have been, then we're making those plays. And then the onus becomes on the goaltender to make the save. Because so it's not like we're shaking our head, walking away. We can't generate anything. We can't make that last pass. Why? Credit to them. They're a good defensive team. They may have a stick in the lane. We're just not making it, too. So at some point, you need to make it, and we did make it. Some of the games, we make it. It's not like, you know, we haven't won and haven't generated. We just need to make it more frequently.
You just said, if we're on. Alex Pietrangelo used the word, the phrase, in our groove. How do you get in your groove? How do you get on for tonight?
Well, by executing. I mean, the plays that you should, right? There are some plays that we've missed that we should, and there's plays that we haven't made because of them. Like, there's always a, you know, a credit to the opposition when you don't execute to your level, and some of it's on us, and that sometimes happens. You're just not executing, and it's hard to explain sometimes, but teams go through some of that. We have to get past it quickly, right, because it's where we are. So how do we do it? Sometimes it's focus. Sometimes it's just squeezing your stick too hard. Sometimes it's not being assertive enough. And we've talked to the guys about this. Like, Jonathan Marchessault led the NHL in goal scoring in the playoffs last year. Do you know when he scored his first goal? Game 8. Game 3 of the second round. So it doesn't happen overnight right away, but then it starts, you can get on a roll, right? So we tell our guys, like, just stick with the process or stick with the details that allow you to get in a position to score. And eventually, if you're a scorer, you get enough chances, you feel like you'll score. And sometimes their goalie will have something to say with that, obviously. But that's how we're trying to approach this. Don't abandon ship and get away from things just because you feel like you got a zero or one beside your goal scoring. It's a tight checking series. It's a low-scoring series. And so that's what we're trying to tell the guys, to, you know, help the team win. And when it's your turn to make a play, like any other part of the ice, when it's your turn to do something, we've used that term around here a lot, then let's make sure we're at least bearing down and giving it your... You're ready to prepare to make the best play. And if it doesn't work out because they do something great, well, that's part of hockey, too.
Hill in net.
Hill is in net.
Okay, one more, Garrett. Sorry, Garrett. In games of this nature, Bruce, do or die games, is it anticipation, excitement, some level of anxiety, a little bit of all three? Where do you stand on games like this?
Well, there's a... You know, people talk about pressure. I remember last year, like, in people say it in different, like last year we went up to Edmonton and their coach mentioned it, we're up 3-2 in the series, the pressure's on us. And I always thought that, well that's odd. But people are going to use that term. I don't look at, we're doing something we love, first of all. Pressure to me is, last year there was stuff going on in Alberta. This, I'd say it's like hostage negotiators. They're under a lot of pressure, firemen. We're playing a game. I look at it as the onus, and I'll use the word responsibility, is on us to play better and execute at the right times and play the right way and take care of the details. It's not pressure. I mean, that's what's in front of us. It's the responsibility is on us to play and execute and do those things if we want to advance. And, you know, that's kind of it. Pressure, yeah, there's pressure in sports, but I think it's that singular moment a lot of times that you can say, okay, 3-2 pitch, bases loaded, there's a lot of pressure on the pitcher and the guy at the plate. Okay, those are unique moments. 6-foot putt to win the Masters, you know, there's always those kind of moments, yes, that come up in a game, but not the going into the game or the whole game. We're going to make mistakes tonight, and we're just going to need the other 4 or 5 guys on the ice to help put out a fire in those situations, we call it, or, you know, diffuse that mistake. It's even like Petro the other night, like, people are on, like, it's an emotional game. We should have killed the penalty. How many penalties has that guy killed for us, like, in the last 2 years? And Stevie's call, like, it's the heat of the face-off. Like, we've killed, those two guys have killed a lot of penalties for this team in the last 2 years, for guys that have taken good penalties, bad. So that's the way I look at it. We're not going to put it all on Petro. Yeah, we got to be better in game management, but kill the penalty for your teammate. It's that simple. Kill the penalty so he can feel better about himself and get back to work. And we didn't do that the other night. So that's where you got to pick each other a little bit. So this isn't pressure. It's responsibility to play for one another, pick each other up, and execute the right play. Timely saves, timely goals, those things. That's what's going to determine whether we win or lose. It's not what we're feeling today at 11 or what somebody writes about. It's just, I don't feel that way. I feel like that's what it's all about.
As he addressed the media after morning skate ahead of game number 6, a must-win game for the Vegas Golden Knights. We're back to wrap it up. Catching up with Chapman is next on the VGK Insider Show.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan, no score in the other game 6 taking place tonight. Vancouver and Nashville, of course, being played at the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. And they are in the second intermission there. And, boy, I could not imagine being a fan of a game that's an elimination game and having no score through 2 periods, and you head to that third knowing that the one goal that scored could end up being a serious deciding goal or a goal that sends your team home. Mm-hmm. Like, I just hope it's not that type of game tonight. I hope it's not like a 0-0 game going into the third. I mean, I'd like to see Vegas just come out and blow them off the ice.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, certainly Dallas is going to have something to say about that. But,
sure.
I mean, nothing like playoff hockey. It is the most intense, like, just stomach nervous, where you get those butterflies in your stomach. Mm-hmm. Like, it's unbelievably intense, and it's so edge of your seat thrilling. You know, I just want to see Vegas come out and just roll tonight. Give me like a 4-1 win. Make it look easy.
Sure.
Plant the seed in Dallas's head that maybe you don't have this in the barrel, lock, stock, and barrel. But man,
so you're not.
I'm not a fan of 0-0 going into the third period. That's for sure.
What about overtime in an elimination game?
No, oh, definitely not.
you don't like that?
Listen, I will forever be haunted by Stefan Matteau. So
that's
no,
good.
I do not want to see overtime in an elimination game.
I don't know. I love overtime,
especially if it's my team facing elimination. And game 7? Oh, forget it.
We've only had one overtime game in this series.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
We're due, huh?
We are due. Pre-game show is next. Keep it here on Fox Sports Las Vegas.